Welcome to the Neo-Narcissism Podcast, hosted by emotional intelligence specialists Kim and Jackie of Element Q, alongside strategic psychotherapist Brad Kaufman.
Welcome to the Neo-Narcissism Podcast. We're happy to have you join us today. Our topic today, the lost fantasy.
It's hard to lose the fantasy. Like, we get hooked in. And this goes back to how we've discussed the illusion. Mm-hmm. So their delusion sucks us in, it becomes our illusion and our fantasy. And in a way, it is a shared fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's like, why wouldn't you want to get on board with what that fantasy is? Like, if that's possible, let's make it happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And especially in love bomb phase, it feels like it has happened.
Yeah.
It does happen.
Yeah, well, you've seen proof in really quick, big ways that mm-hmm. this fantasy is possible and real, and it feels good, and it's addictive, and it's intoxicating, all of those words, feelings.
And it is intoxicating. And then you sit there and you wonder, why is this not sustainable? Mm-hmm. Like, because it feels like it should be sustainable. Like, we've achieved this, why can't we constantly achieve these type of experiences? And that's what makes it so crazy. Like, for a lot of us that survive the relationship, we end up going like, how could they give that up?
Yeah.
I don't understand how they can give that up. But the thing is, they're just out trying to recreate fantasy with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And it won't be the same fantasy, right? Because they're really skilled at knowing what their next supply's fantasies might be. So they'll fulfill that. So you may witness an ex-narcissist significant other in their next relationship and looking like everything they're doing for this person and all that this relationship looks like. And you might, you know, might feel a bit jealous, but it's not what they give in fantasy, in creating that fantasy, is actually not based on their own stuff. What it's based off them is just the need to create the fantasy, not the content of the fantasy. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. The content of the fantasy is about the empath. Really.
Well, I would say in the love bomb stage.
Yeah.
Where they want you to feel mm-hmm. like every one of your fantasies is coming true or
yeah.
is possible to come true.
That they are the fit for that.
That yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That they are the catalyst for that, and this is the perfect union,
mm-hmm.
the perfect soulmates to make it happen. And then they will start bringing in their fantasy,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what is
okay.
meaningful or what you want. And they will literally repeat with a different individual
mm-hmm.
the same things that you did. They will literally go to the same resorts.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do the same dates.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do everything because they're trying to... they have a novel player to recreate this stuff with. And in a way, they still have this person idealized in their mind. So they're now sharing this event with an idealized supply.
I see, yeah.
And so that makes it a heightened experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas only a few months previous, you were doing the same thing together and it didn't have the same flair to them. Because, you know, the... devalued you and beat you down, and you were no longer this idealistic individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the irony of their curse, is that they take their ideal, they devalue their ideal, and even though you're still the same person, you have zero value to them.
Yeah.
Even though you've changed nothing, if anything,
mm-hmm.
you've actually refined yourself to be more satisfying to them,
yeah.
and that actually leads to them being more dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the irony.
The narcissistic paradox.
Yeah.
So, within this lost fantasy then, well, the loss of all of it, the relationship, the fantasy, future fantasies, whatever that might look like for you, it's a big component of grief there.
Mm-hmm.
And a sense, I would think, some people might feel a sense of unworthiness. because you just fall from such a high pedestal, really. Yeah, so none of that, you know, none of that's true, if that is the experience that you're feeling right now, if you're in that phase of this, it will pass. It is not true. Just because a narcissist maybe discarded you, and that in itself may feel devaluing, right, or hit at your sense of worth, it's not reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But,
and you'll get through it, but the grief is intense. Yeah.
And that is hard to believe. In those initial moments after the discard, even the initial months after the discard, it just feels like you're going to be stuck in it forever.
Mm-hmm.
So to, you know, even be able to take that to heart, like if some of our listeners are in that initial spot, it's like, yeah, that's easy for you to say.
Yeah.
And our listeners will literally feel like, yeah, but you don't know how connected we actually were. You don't know the us. This was a match written in the stars, and it got torn to shreds.
Yeah.
It's like nobody can possibly understand how much this hurts.
Yeah.
So, but you're right. There is a way through. It's deep grief. It's complex grief. It's the layers of grief, right? Because oftentimes you don't only just lose the person, but you lose the concept of who that person was.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you have to come to the new understanding, a new integrated understanding, that this person was amazing and horrific
at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah. I think there also is... grief or loss around who you became in the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Depending on the length of the relationship, right? You might be in different phases of, how did you say it? Like,
who you became
who,
in the relationship.
Of what you may have sensed that you've lost, or you've set aside parts of yourself to be in that relationship and to maintain that relationship.
Well, there's a fantasy around that. There's
there
a
is.
Fantasy around the fact that you were still being an authentic version of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to explore that a little bit further. So in terms of how much you lost of yourself within the relationship, because I think that's one side. It also depends on how soon into the relationship the discard happened, because I have seen it where there's a really abrupt shift from being idealized to completely devalued to discarded. Where people feel great in a relationship. They've never felt better, right? Their esteem is really high. They feel like they're succeeding in the world. They go out in public and feel great. And the next moment, the person drops them. So you can also have that loss of, well, where does that person go at that point, right? So it can be either. You can grieve the idealized self, and you can grieve the, what would you call it?
I was going to say it's like the grieving that the idealized self wasn't good enough.
That too.
It's complicated.
It's complicated. Complicated grief.
Yeah.
That's grief. It
yeah,
really
so it's like the idealized self still wasn't good enough. And then the other self didn't show up as to who they wanted to be in the relationship.
Well, and even if you did show up as to who you wanted to be, it wasn't accepted.
It wasn't accepted.
So then that's where we move into that conditional acceptance, where we adapt, where we want to experience that harmony, unity, and acceptance, but it's just conditional. Because we've changed so much and adapted so much that, yeah, we lose this other sense of self.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're catering so much. Now, of course, that touches on the dimension, the ability to adapt.
Yeah.
Which is actually a strength.
Yes.
But at an extreme, it's, of course,
yeah.
a detriment.
Yeah, I think that's a good point on the grief there, Jackie, is that you have to grieve that sense of yourself that you stepped away from.
Because it forces you, it forces, you know, for, well, okay. it encourages you to put you in a position of being a doormat. You're not being in an empowered badass position. So there's going to be sacrifices you make along the way to maintain that position, right? And that is a huge loss to see all the ways you weren't standing in an empowered version of you.
And of course, what makes you attractive in the first place to the narcissist is your strength. And so as you change, you also move away from that core strength.
Right.
And so you do end up looking pathetic in their eyes, even though you're doing everything that you think that
they want
you to do.
You kind of get put into a catch-22 because they are attracted to you because you are an empowered person, but then they force you to not be empowered because if you are empowered, you hold a boundary that they won't like. So then they force you to be a doormat, and then they get tired of you.
Exactly. They can't tolerate powerful, strong people.
Yeah.
Right? They need to be the one in charge, like you're talking about, that control, that in charge all the time.
Yeah.
One of the things that you spoke about there, though, is there's a clear moment for the empath where it's where things start to shift, where they would consider giving up parts of themselves, which is within that, oh, this narcissist person saw me for who I authentically am, and they wanted me for that, and they loved me for that, and look at the amazing relationship we have, and I get to be myself.
For a moment it existed.
That moment. And then there is that slice in the fabric of that happens where that's now not good enough. And then you're like, well, so then you do start to adapt and change.
Yeah.
You're like, well, wait a minute. I was at my truest, fullest self, and it was great, apparently. But now it's not. So then how seemingly easily, as an empath, you can give up those portions of yourself, but you think, well, I know who I am in my fullest self, so I'm all of this. So if I just, like, move this one piece, that's not a big deal. That's not going to impact me that much. I'll just move that one piece of myself aside. I'll just move that one piece of myself aside. And then you've given up so many pieces of your authentic self that what are they like? So yeah, of course, like when you say it, then you just end up looking kind of pathetic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In the eyes of the narcissist.
Right. And essentially, you end up kind of feeling kind of pathetic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Too. And then this is where you can easily get gaslighted.
Yeah.
Now you touch on something. This is a little bit of a rabbit trail, but I think it's a very important rabbit trail. You talk about these pieces, adapting these pieces of self.
Mm-hmm.
We are multi-dimensional beings.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's dimensions of us. So like you're saying, oh, okay, I guess me highlighting this dimension of me isn't working as well as it used to, so I'm going to use this other dimension of me, which they seem to prefer a little bit more, and I'm going to let that one be in the forefront. I'm going to let that dimension of myself lead.
Mm-hmm.
So it still feels authentic to some
yes.
degree. But then, you know, you keep bringing out these dimensions like you're talking about, and it's like, ooh, that got devalued, or it seems that doesn't work, so I guess I'll just put that one on the shelf over there, and then I'll take this dimension, and oh, that doesn't work anymore, I'll put that one on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up almost unidimensional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think that's a great way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You become that robot.
Yeah.
You become that complying, conform to whatever the moment demands,
yeah,
without actually being your multidimensional self anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the sake of what is demanded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in pursuit of the fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well said.
Well, and also look at how much you've adapted and given up in pursuit of this fantasy. You don't want to give up on that either.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, by that point.
By that point.
Yeah, exactly.
To turn around and look at everything you've put on the shelf and given up and dropped along the way. Oof.
Yeah.
You might as well just keep on keeping on, even if there's only shatters of you left, because
yeah.
that is still a more tangible pursuit than all the work that's going to be required to look back.
Mm-hmm.
And perceived.
Perceived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is work, but
yeah.
I just don't want you...
Yeah, yeah. It's perceived in the
yeah.
moment, but that it is a reality in that moment because the discomfort of the web of lies or what you've given up is huge.
Yeah.
And to look back on that, and it's a lot. It's a hard choice at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it can feel easier to stay the course.
Yes.
It's familiar, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Within that.
And you always have the dangling carrot.
Yes.
There's always the dangling carrot.
Right.
It's always, that fantasy will return.
Mm-hmm.
That experience, that mountaintop will return.
Yeah.
It's constantly sitting there as a reinforcement. Now, of course, in psychology, we call that intermittent reinforcement, and that's what they use in casinos.
Mm.
Because if it's predictable, if there's a pattern to it, you actually lose interest. But if there's unknown pattern, where you know there has to be a jackpot in there somewhere, you just keep pulling the lever, pulling the lever, pulling the lever, pulling the lever. Even if it's not like a mountaintop, even if you get a subtle wind, that just kind of reinforces it.
Right.
But, or something that feels like, oh, that could be an opportunity for, right? It becomes potential for, then yeah, you're grasping at that one potential.
Fantasy.
Yep.
Ding, ding, ding.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing, that's literally how we get manipulated in these relationships. That's literally how we get brainwashed
yeah.
within them.
Mm-hmm.
Because of somebody else's agenda that we start pursuing
mm-hmm.
as our own.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well said.
Mm-hmm.
So as usual, you don't know how to deal with something until you know what you're dealing with. We'll see you next time.